Good afternoon. So I'm Nakia, and I'm really excited to talk to you guys today. Let's create a signal right now. If you are from the South, then I need to know so that you can give me a little hand signal so I can slow down. Because I can really get going quickly, especially when I get excited, and I'm excited about breastfeeding. All right, so what's that signal going to be? How about this one? All right, so if I'm looking, okay, that's a good one too. It's pretty straightforward. So if I'm going too fast, you guys let me know, and I'll look out for that signal from you. All right, so I don't have anything to disclose. I don't have any financial relationships. I could stand to have more financial relationships, but nothing to disclose is important. So I work with the National Association of County and City Health Officials, NACHO, not Nacho, NACHO. We are a 501c3 organization, and we are the voice at the national level of local health departments. And so NACHO represents about 2,800 city, county, metro, district, and tribal local health departments across the country, and we're headquartered in Washington, D.C. So through funding from the CDC, Division of Nutrition, Physical Activity, and Obesity, we have the Reducing Disparities Through Peer and Professional Support project, and it's a four-year cooperative agreement with CDC, and we're currently within year two of the project. So our project goals really are to increase the implementation of evidence-based and innovative peer and professional support activities. And so what that means in layman's terms is our goal is to give funding to community-level organizations. Now, although NACHO works with local health departments, this particular project is interesting because we get to work with a diversity of organizations at the local level. Another core goal is to increase awareness of what's going on through this process, which is why we're here talking with you today, and we hope to have many more opportunities through lots of abstract submissions to tell what's happening as we're doing this project. And also really to increase partnerships, not just at the community level with our grantees, but also at the national level. And so through our funding with CDC, we actually convened the Breastfeeding Public Health Partners through NACHO. So our projects, let me tell you a little bit about them. We have 63 grantees, at least we did in year one. In year two, we're working with 61 grantees so far. I haven't heard any other news that indicates it's a different number. And our goal is, and Catherine already alluded to it, is to additionally, our goal originally was to fund 70 organizations, and 65 grantees were originally funded, and we broke down to 63 when it was all said and done, and CDC would like us to, and we would like to also, to really get to the original number that we wanted to fund. And so through the Empower Hospital sites, we are going to work with the local health departments at some of those areas to give money so that they can do step 10 activities to facilitate what the hospitals want to do and also work at the community level. And our grantees, I didn't say it, but they're in 32 states and territories across the country, including Palau. We also have a grantee in Hawaii. So our grantee organizations types, we have community-based organizations, local health departments, hospital and hospital-based clinics. We have community health centers, and we also have some tribal organizations. And those others include, like we have a foundation, things like that. So most of our grantees really are community-based organizations and local health departments. We have grantees who are serving different types of target communities. For the most part, our communities are urban-oriented. Our goal was to really fund organizations and to fund communities targeting African-American women and low-income women, the areas in the target communities that we know to have lower breastfeeding rates. Even though those are the goals, we're also funding areas that are rural, suburban, tribal, and some grantees are doing an urban-rural mix or urban-suburban mix. One that I can think of is a grantee that's working in New York. They have some rural area and also some urban area. So our target populations, I already said this, but we're serving predominantly African-American women, 75%, also low-income and other racial and minority ethnic groups. I said that we have a grantee in Hawaii and also a grantee in Palau, and so those are Pacific Islanders. The type of activities that our grantees are engaged in, everybody is doing peer and or professional support. So that's a given. Everybody is doing some direct peer and professional support, and that might look like group support activities, one-on-one encounters, But we also have grantees that are doing other things to kind of support the totality of their work. So it's one thing to just say, oh, I'm going to start a new project and we're going to expand our groups. But sometimes you also need to do other services around that group or that one-on-one work in order to get your full activity moving forward. And so we have grantees that are doing professional education. Katja is here from Maternity Care Coalition, and they are doing some work with training their home visitors to be breastfeeding champions in the community. So that's a part of the education that's happening. We have grantees that are doing maternity care practice. Some of our grantees are hospitals. We have people doing stuff in the workplace. Social marketing work is happening. And then we also have some early care and education activities. All right. So what do we do? So those are what the grantees are doing. What do we do? This is our team. Those are our pictures. There are a lot of us, but there are a lot of grantees, and we do a lot of activities with them. So we also have our Breastfeeding Project website, where you can always come and learn more about us. It's breastfeeding.nature.org. We have a community of practice, which we've put together. It's an online learning collaborative space for our grantees to come and engage with us. We have hosted regional grantee meetings for our kickoff activities. One of them was in Chicago during the blizzard. Never again. But we did it. It happened, and everybody showed up. We also are going to have a closing meeting in April of this year with our grantees that have been funded so far for 18. Will have been funded for 18 months. We also gave out a grantee manual with lots of tools and resources, and we also do host webinars and do peer sharing calls. Slow down. Okay, I didn't see the quotes from out there. Okay, you guys did. Okay. All right. So, Breastfeeding Public Health Partners, and this is where I really what we want to get to. So I'll slow down now. Okay. All right. So, like I said, we have the partners, and we are convening together. The purpose of us coming together, and these guys have already said it all, it's really to inform our various project activities. We're all doing this work, and sometimes when you start working in a silo, it's hard to get the information across from one team to another team, from one agency to another agency. And if you're doing the same work, then it really makes sense to try to build the work and not work in your separate spaces. We want to increase information and resource sharing, and also to improve our collaboration and coordination of activities. So these are the grantees, these are the partners who are at the table. The partners who are not at the table, who are newer members to the partnership, include the National League of Cities, National WIC Association, and the Association of State and Public Health Nutritionists. All right? So those guys came on later, which is why they're not here with us right now at the platform. So in terms of the activities that we've been able to complete so far, we do monthly partner calls. We also had an in-person meeting that was very productive. We did some activities hosted by USBC for National Public Health Week in 2015. It was a really outstanding Twitter chat. We have done conference abstract submissions and presentations to talk about and promote our work. And also we've promoted our work on each other's different calls, four of them so far. So we have some priorities moving forward that we were able to pull together through our face-to-face meeting, and that really focuses on doing joint advocacy activities. While we want to promote what our grantees are experiencing through our own presentations, we also want our grantees to have the capacity to do that. So one goal is to promote their capacity to do their own sharing of their best practices, also helping our communities to identify what their role is within this whole thing, and also to share resources and landscape at the community, national, and state level. So what are our successes and challenges? And even though it says challenges, I want us to just read opportunities. All right, so our successes have been, at least with NATO, we have a really excellent partnership with our project officer through CDC, and it works very, very well, not with just our project officer, but also with other DNPAO staff. The Breastfeeding Public Health Partners, this has also been a really successful partnership and opportunity for us. I think that we've learned a lot from one another, and I'm going to highlight a few of those things. And then we also have, for at least with the NATO grantees, we have a very diverse level of grantees that we're supporting. They're, like I said, they're from all over the country, except for the Rocky region. they are diverse in size and in terms of their target populations and also in their experience. And that's actually a success and a challenge. We also have created lots of peer learning opportunities for our grantees. So let's talk a little bit about more of these opportunities here. So our grantees, great. Our grantees, this is my last slide, so I'm all right. So Our grantees do have technical and financial capacity concerns that we've encountered. Some of them, because of maybe the newness of their organizations, maybe a brand new or very young coalition, they don't necessarily have solid project management capacity or full-time capacity to do project management. That might also be relevant. Some of the smaller, because we do subawards and our grants are range from $25,000 about for urban communities and $15,000 for rural communities. Sometimes smaller grantees don't have the capacity to pay up front and receive their do a subaward and get their money reimbursed. So we have to be creative about how to make that happen for them. We have funding level diversity as a challenge or an opportunity for us. We have talked to people in the field who've let us know that, hey, you know, it will be really helpful for us. We don't need $15,000, but if you could give us $5,000 for a project, we could really make some stuff happen in our community. And that goes back to the size issue. Partnership development, I think that there's a lot of territorial behavior in the breastfeeding community, something to be worked on, and it exists at the local and at the national level. And some grantees, because of where they're positioned maybe within their agency or because of their experience in the field, really do lack the capacity to push their own partnerships. And so there's also a need to, at least my perspective at this juncture is, when CDC gives you money, they want a lot of stuff back. and when we give grantees money, we have to keep in mind that it's $15,000 or $25,000, and there's a real need to balance the requirements of the money with what we're with the funding level. We need to be realistic and understand what people can and cannot do. I have some specific, you can ask me questions about it because my time is up, but I have some specific ways that we've all partnered together really, really well. It's all on the sheet. So ask that question so I can tell you about it, and right now I'm going to open it up for questions and answers.
First, I want to thank the presenters for staying within their time limits because the value of coming to APHA and the value of the annual meeting is not to sit there and be talked at. The value is the networking and the discussions and the interaction. So we now have a pretty substantial period of time, if you consider 25 minutes a substantial period of time, to have some of that interaction with the panel and the audience. So I'd like to open this up to questions from the audience. And what we'll do is repeat the question because this is all part of the session that's being taped. So I see a question from Deborah.
Hey, hi, Deborah Jackson. I live in New York. And one of the things you're looking at is you want to support breastfeeding in the advantage community. And this is kind of a controversial question, but actually it's me trying to understand where it's going. When you met in the city, you're talking about community health workers, you're talking about supporting breastfeeding, and a query or a complaint or a challenge that they were facing, especially with regards to looking at long-term sustainability, is that peer supporters and community health workers cannot be directly reimbursed for community health workers. And that they felt that there was a feeling that this was promoting if you want some structural, disadvantage in the community because they basically only the licensed professionals who are advantaged can get it reimbursed and the, and that it perpetuates the disadvantage of the community women who don't have the training. They may be their CLC, their trained community health workers, the trained expression of peer supporters, but they can't be trained in a way that would reverse and that would seem as basically a perpetuating disadvantage of the women in the community who are trying to support themselves. And so I think you mentioned a lot about the program for peer and professional, and I'm wondering, how that treats you
So this is a question about the issue that there are limitations on who can get reimbursed through the health, through the Affordable Care Act or through the ACA, particularly for people who are not licensed, and that's very much controlled kind of by the state. So I don't know which of the y'all, but we should
start. Fantastic question. Incidentally, is something that we have been very, very heavily at work in the last couple of weeks because When I mentioned we have our professional and peer support strategy convening national stakeholders, the USBC is actually convening all of the lactation support providers across the continuum of peer and professional and the whole gamut. And they're getting together this weekend for, I think, now their fourth or fifth meeting in a series of conversations. And in fact, this morning I went to a session about community health workers that, if you didn't get a chance to check it out, was about the C3 program, looking at how they are bringing together across, they said almost all 50 states are doing something to begin to do policy around community health workers. And in fact, Illinois, here in my home state, has a bill that was recently passed that is working on community health worker certification. So there's many, many initiatives going on. You're raising a really critical point, because the Affordable Care Act opened this up in a way that is still emerging, that is still evolving, and lactation is right at the center of it, because we have almost a proliferation of all sorts of providers in lactation who mostly aren't licensed. And that's also, incidentally, why this partners group, when we met in August, you saw on Nakia's slide, we prioritized some advocacy, specifically looking first at those issues around Medicaid, around payment, around the HHS lack of guidance that is helping to really make that benefit real. So there's a lot of activities and strategies being pursued, and in particular, one of the key facets is getting all those organizations together to work jointly to expand the network and really leverage a bunch of different policy mechanisms that are, you know, there's several, even three or four avenues in Medicaid alone that we're looking at to try to push the needle or to move the needle on that. But one of the things we're going to need is state pilots. So anybody here in this room who's interested in trying something out, we are right now, we're going to be looking for some different states to be trying something out and maybe looking for some seed funding. So anyway, I'll stop there and see if my partners want to share anything else.
So I think that it's a really critical point that you put forward, because that's something that we have recognized. We don't define for our grantees who's a peer and who's a professional. We ask them to check it off for themselves, and we give the standard definitions that you kind of see, textbook definitions of peer and professional. And what we have determined and what we've seen is that a peer in one organization is a professional in another. And so we are actually something that we can probably, I haven't told Megan yet, but something that we're doing that we can use to possibly help to inform the conversation is we're going to have all of our grantees simply do a questionnaire where they tell us what is the level of training that the person has and what is their scope of work. They can still check off peer professional however they like, because it's not for us to define. I think that it does create a space of, and I'll just say it, structural racism, where you kind of are continuously categorizing people into these places and not necessarily giving opportunities for people to be able to easily move from one space to another in a very fluid way. And also, even for persons who may want to stay, and I'm going to put the quote marks around it because I don't define it as peer professional, because there can be professional peers, okay? But for peers who maybe want to stay in that space of doing more emotional or community health worker level kind of support, but want to do it in a way that allows them to be paid in a sustainable way so that they can support their families and still do work that they love. So I think that it's a great conversation. We're going to do this analysis with our grantees just so that we have a way of analyzing what work is happening with people who are trained and operating in a particular scope of work without necessarily analyzing it based upon peer and or professional. So I think it's a really valid question and something that's much rising to the surface within our own work.
Yeah, I know that Joanne wants to talk, so have at it.
Counselors, I think that we can strategically really
So Joanne, your comment is really to separate out, to not mix this discussion with the CHWs.
We can have that conversation. One is, and I'll have before. You see, I just want to say how thrilled I am that you raised those administrative issues at the end. Because we're one of your grantees, and I have to tell you, my fiscal department is ready to, like, give you grant back. It's ridiculous. And for $25,000. And I think we have to get real. I was at a conference with the National Grant Makers and Help a number of years ago where somebody from a foundation in New York got off and said, you know, what are we asking these people to do for an amount of money that doesn't even pay for one salary? And if you think about this in terms of what is a salary in terms of the deliverables that we're asking for, it's ridiculous. So I think we've got to really lift this up and make the work and compensation commensurate. So thank you.
That's good. So again, a comment regarding the challenges of management of small grants and, you know, the capacity of organizations to do that. Yeah, so I have there's one of the major funded projects in my community and are one of my partners, and every month we meet with them, we have a similar discussion. They share with me their headaches. So they actually thinking working with me and the university and the NIH is easier than working with me. So, and that's, I'm saying something. Okay, other questions from the audience? Sorry to diverge on. Other questions or comments? Yes. And can you say who you are? So the question is about essentially the territoriality of the people who are providing breastfeeding support. So you've got this group, that group, and the other, and how are they coordinating, or how do we get people to kind of crosstalk or crosswork? Is that capture what you're asking? Okay.
Would like to handle that one.
McKee and I are looking at
I'm glad you asked that question. So we see it in different ways, and some communities are actually able to bridge it, and others stay mired in their struggle. With one grantee, and when grantees are doing great, I'll tell you their name, and when they're not, I'll just mums, right? Okay, so one grantee, they're having that particular issue, and it really has to do with the funding came through one particular portion of an agency that doesn't normally do breastfeeding support work, and I think that now that they have the money, they want to work with the other organ, the other part of the health department. And I think that it really comes down in the beginning to creating your partnerships on some level up front and not necessarily trying to do everything on the back end, and having really strong relationships, not with a single entity, but really working with multiple entities within an agency so that you have more than one touch point. So that if a person falls kind of out of the scene, you have other people who you've already started to build relationships with. And also I think it's important to build relationships outside of a particular program or project. It's important to have relationships for the purpose of relationships. We are working with CGBI, and before the idea of doing this collaborative work with the Empower grantees, it's easy to move that progress and move that process forward and have those conversations because we're already meeting monthly. We're already doing this work together. And I'm going to give you an example of a grantee that started out crazy, and I'll tell you who they are, and who really turned themselves around through the power of their partnership. So partnerships are a challenge, also an opportunity. St. John. in St. John. We have a hospital system, and two different hospitals within the hospital system applied for and received the grant. They came to the meeting in Chicago and found out, what are you doing here? And what are you doing here? We are not working together, and this is, oh no. But and we really did send them home with the idea that you guys have to figure this out. You're serving essentially communities that are neighbor one another, and we can't have this fight happening. Actually, a part of our partnership is we have a consultant who works with us, a contractor, and she's actually coming from USBC. So thank you for asking these questions. I get to highlight what our partnership still, right? So Emily worked with us, and she was the key point person working with those two hospital sites. And they've done some incredible work. The first hospital site was working with a coalition, and they were kind of the proxy for the coalition to apply, and it was applied for by a nurse who didn't have any administrative experience in a hospital. And if you've worked in a hospital system or just a big bureaucracy and you're not a person who does the work in a bureaucracy, you know you can't get anything done. You cannot get anything done in a bureaucracy unless you are a part of unless you're a bureaucrat within it. You can't be a program person and get stuff done in a bureaucracy. So nothing was happening with the grant. It was falling apart. The other organization, they had the right person working on the grant in terms of the bureaucracy, but they didn't have the right persons in terms of getting the breastfeeding support work done. And so they were able to really partner together. One part of the hospital, they hired a peer counselor on to work at the hospital at night, to be there in a space where the IBCLCs are no longer present and where moms need support overnight. The other one, they turned over the entire grants management to the administrator of the other site. And so she manages the entire grant. They gave a sub opportunity to the coalition who does all of the breastfeeding support work. The peer counselor who is actually at night works for is a part of the coalition. I mean, and so it's like a complete win for everybody. Both sites are doing incredible work, but everybody got their ego out of the picture.
Had to think for a minute about that one, but I guess a few things I would share, both from the national and the more state or local perspective. So full disclosure, I didn't come to this work as a breastfeeding person. My background is in peace and conflict resolution. I'm not kidding.
She's fully employed using those skills in this work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, there is a fair degree where sometimes you just need that kind of, you know, mediation or third party or neutral person to come into a situation and actually just apply that. You know, sometimes it's even just sitting down with different people who are having a conflict and understanding what's really going on here, what are your interests. So often, even at the national table of the lactation support providers, there are myths, there are misperceptions, there are misunderstandings, that sometimes when there's just somebody who gets in there and talks to people, it just gets, you know, resolved or figured out. And then then you can also start to see if there's somebody at the center who can see, well, I understand these people's interests and those people's interests and these people's interests, and they can start to see where they come together. So that's all part of, you know, my earlier key lesson learned is that this work takes time and needs more money and investment, because that kind of work is not easy, and it takes a special, you know, level of skill and neutral people, and sometimes you've got to be able to fund that. So, you know, just a few tips. You know, sometimes you just got to pay attention, as Nakia said, to the relationship building, and when it's already gone wrong, it takes even more time and intervention than it did when you established it up front, like Nakia said. So, you know, those are just a few thoughts. You know, another example at the state level, we had to actually, you know, physically go in and, you know, fly in and sit with the state coalition board to deal with an intractable conflict between, you know, territorial folks in a state. It just needed that level, and it had gone on for years and years and years, and when we finally just, you know, put up a little money and went there, and there was somebody there that was a neutral player helping that conversation along, it really helped. So, you know, this is my, you know, passion. Would love to chat more about this kind of thing if anybody would like to hear more.
I'd like to say something that goes along really well with that is from the funder's perspective, and I guess subfunder, because we're funded from the CDC to fund the states, but with those five states that we're providing enhanced funding to, while some of them were already working with their coalition, their breastfeeding coalitions nicely. Not all of them were. And so sometimes you kind of have to force it with money and say, you guys are going to work together because you should be working together and you're not. And while not all funders are going to do that, and there's not always that relationship there, sometimes if you are in that position, if you can kind of push hands together and force them to hold them or something, it really can help break down some of those barriers. And now that we've, you know, gone into the states and done some of that action planning process together with them, the states that were struggling a little bit are saying, oh, what were our problems in the first place? This is going well. Or at least they're a little more willing to call one another and work together and talk about other issues on areas that aren't funded currently. And so I would just give that plug that if you have that opportunity, money doesn't, you know, just happen anywhere, but if it is, it's sometimes you have to force people to work together too.
So you can tell this is a topic that it hits close to all these women's hearts.
I would just say, too, I know Megan mentioned it in the beginning, but USBC has been a true leader in collective impact and has really embraced that model and has used it to bring national organizations, state and local coalitions together. So if you don't yet know what collective impact framework is about, I encourage you to read. It really is where public health is going. It's where it's the models that the funders use to get the funds out. And we've learned a lot and just really embrace it, really learning what it means to work together.
So we have time for a couple more questions, and I kind of laugh. I brought folk together years ago about, you know, perinatal smoking cessation, and we didn't have a problem in our community, but the city down the road did, and they were like, well, yeah, the American Cancer Society, the American Lung Association won't sit down at the same table together because they're competitors. I'm like, so there aren't enough smokers in the world? So in this case, it's not like there's, you know, unmet breastfeeding, you know, that we've met all the breastfeeding needs in the world, and we're arguing? Thank you. Anyway. Other comments, questions, observations that the group here would like to make, or sharing stories of some successes? One of the reasons that I brought this group together, so Megan and I talked in August of last year, when I said, geez, I have this opportunity as the chair, you know, rank has its privileges, I can say this is what I would like the forum to be dedicated to. And she talked about this this group, and I think that the slide at the end here, which, you know, shows who all you have at the table and who all you're planning to, one of the things that I was struck by as an earlier table that was in here was this table, which talked about, my glasses on, lead, support, and potential partners. And I would like to hear, who else needs to be part of this? There's some blank boxes here. Who else do you want to have in here? Have you tried to get in? When we talk about partners collaborating, are there people who you would like to see here that you either had difficulty with or that, you know, was on your wish list? Maybe there are some people around the room here who might be able to help with it. So we just like a perspective, maybe as a some closing comments on where you see this group moving and developing and growing. And anybody can take that question.
Well, I can speak to the first one, I guess. And, you know, I guess I would add, and Nakia can nod if I'm on the right track, that this chart isn't meant to be, you know, a mutually exclusive of every possible partner that might be. But certainly with the advocacy piece, we intend to bring in way more than even just the potential partners that you see here. You know, we're working on a sign-on letter that would go to Secretary Burwell about the coverage guidance and you know, some other things that would certainly be opened up to everyone. In particular, what we would like to do with the partners, particularly in advocacy to Burwell, is to lift up the work that everybody is doing and the fact that, on the one hand, HHS is funding all of this work, but on the other hand, HHS is not putting out clear guidance that is really needed for our work to maximize the impact. So, you know, we'd like to tell some extra stories, anecdotes from everybody's grantees, from their work in that advocacy. So, you know, this group is going to be working on an additional piece, but certainly would like to bring in any, you know, any and all partners into supporting that advocacy. I don't know if there's on the other ones, if anybody wants to.
Yeah, so we have a comment before? Yes, go ahead. So hearing from kind of the voices of the individuals who we are trying to influence as another, you know, kind of partnership opportunity. Somebody in the front? Go ahead. So I think the role of the partner in terms of translating, you know, the national agenda and discussion down to with the community. Megan would like to make one comment, and then we will wrap it up.
I was just going to add, I think, a helpful bit of clarification, again, of how all of our work connects together. We also, you know, as you saw in my presentation about the grassroots to the treetops, at USBC, we are bringing together collaborative groups that do involve folks at the national, the state, the local level. That's a big part of our collective impact approach, is bringing together those groups. And many of public health partners then support, they are joining into those groups, they're even stewarding, leading some of those groups. So, you know, on their topic areas like maternity care, lactation support providers, workplace, you know, we have other connections where these guys are able to connect into that work on more the topical Surgeon General's action areas. These areas on this slide in particular were really envisioned as, you know, for the partners group to, you know, how we could further our own internal partnership, and specifically looking more. These are more, I would think, functional areas of promoting grantees. You know, they're a little bit different than the changes that we're trying to make in the world. So, you know, just a sort of a structural difference that. But certainly, you know, we are looking to bring in the other voices into inform our work. But this chart is particularly about the partners. So anyway, thank you.
Great. Well, I want to again thank the panel here for putting together this nice thing.